Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
And as Jennifer Hudson is singing and I'm telling you about going, I start crying and I literally, it started to dawn on me. I was like, oh no, I don't think I like women. I mean, I was like, I knew, but I was like, I don't think many straight men are like giving standing ovation at the AMC in St. Louis, Missouri to Jennifer Hudson.
Stood at the AMC.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I'm Eric Williams, and this episode is for the Broadway babies. Oh, I grew up absolutely obsessed with all things musical theater. You would think the first CDs I ever bought were Broadway themed, but it was actually the albums of Clay Aiken and Ruben Studdard. Then I went to the cast recordings. I believe my first one was Aida. Yes, that is correct. Aida, the love story between a Nubian princess and a white man written by Elton John. Hi. This week's guest is Broadway star Nick Rashad Burrows. Nick has the most insane story of how he became a Broadway performer, and I'm truly so excited for you to hear him tell it. His credits include the Broadway National Tour of Something Rotten, along with the Broadway productions of Kinky Boots, King Kong, and Tina, the Tina Turner musical. You may have also heard Nick in Tadric Hall's incredible song Ordinary Day. We discuss his journey of going from Alabama to Broadway, when he met Liza Minnelli, the controversial topic of Jennifer Hudson's acting chops, and so much more. Make sure to subscribe, and if you're enjoying, please give us a little love note and a 5-star review so more people can join the fun. All right, here he is. Nick Rashad Burrows on the podcast. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, beautiful. How are you?
Good. I'm so happy to see you, to be with you, to talk to you. The first question I have to ask you, Nick, is whose fault is it that you're gay? Like, what? Who did it? Was it a TV show? Was it an actress? Was it a Broadway moment? What is it?
Honestly, like, it was when I was very fighting that closet journey for a while. But it was when I got confident into the opening of this closet journey to realize that I didn't love Petita Miller and Sutton Foster so much because they were beautiful women. I wanted to be those beautiful women. And that is when I decided to realize, you know what, you might have a little sugar indeed in the tank.
A little sugar in the tank. Right, Nick. I mean, come on, Petita Miller and Sutton Foster both would turn any man gay.
I mean, I just really wanted to be Petita Miller, like in the sense of like fitness. I was like, I wanted to work out and have her arms. I wanted to have her nasal quality. I wanted to use the enticing eyeballs at
the
every
eyeballs.
Camp I could. The eyeballs were like, I'm talking about me in college. Like, I'm talking about, I just watched every video. You know, my angel's name in Kinky Boots, when I did Kinky Boots, is Rashida Miller. As in, I like to think that in drag, I am the sister of Petita Miller. That's just where my passion went.
I mean, are you absolutely, like, how could it not be? It's like kind of a to B to C moment. You turn into the drag version of Petita Miller. I mean, I saw her in Pippin and I saw the eyeballs from the last row. I like
Chain
the eyeballs, life changing. And I'm so broke that I literally was like watching the show from the sound booth because that's all I could afford. And I could still see her blinking those piercing eyes.
Yeah. Those eyes are Broadway magic. So
have you met her?
I haven't like met her. Like, but I like when I was in college, I went to the stage door and I was just like, you. And I remember telling, well, the first time I met her, actually, that was the second stage door moment I had with her. First time I saw Broadway sister act and died. Naturally. And so I went up to her. I hope she remembers this and says this in like an interview somewhere, because I think it's iconic and memorable, but whatever. But like, I walked up to her and I was just like, hi, Petita Miller. I just would like to say that you are incredible and that I hope someone writes Michelle Obama the musical for you so that you can get your rightfully deserved Tony. And then she literally laughed and said, "Oh my God, I love this kid. Let's get a picture." I'll never forget it.
Oh my. Well, you know what, though? You are right that Michelle Obama needs a musical. What do you think the music is like for the Michelle Obama musical? What's the vibe of this musical?
It's very, very like a Kelly O'Hara musical, but different. Yes. Chocolate, you know? Yes. I think it's that. And I know that Patina has that. She hasn't been able to show the kids. She hasn't. I've seen all of her college videos. You know, I know her rep.
She has the range. Patina Miller has the range. Has the range. So wait a minute. So this Michelle Obama musical starring Patina Miller, who is, obviously you're in it, but what role are you playing? B, who is playing her husband?
Well, I'm a standby for Patina Miller. I respectfully will let someone else have that moment, but I will be the standby. I will do the weekends, the magic.
You will Shoshana Bean, the Idina Menzel in that situation.
You know what I mean? I'm into that. I will take that seat back just to, for that. But for me, I think it's a breakout star.
I think it's
a reality TV sitch. Like if you think about it, like we like get all of these, think about how inspiring it would be, get all these little young black musical theater girls just like in there singing Fabulous Baby in competition style back to back. We would die. If we died over Search for Elle Woods, we would die for Search for Dolores Van Cartier.
Oh my gosh, Nick. I know you're like a Broadway star, actor phenomenon, but also a producer, it turns out. You have ideas that are money makers.
I'm not playing around, okay?
Hello?
I'm not playing around, yeah.
Maybe well, speaking of deserving, your talent, we are just so blessed to have. I mean that wholeheartedly. You are so effing talented. But what I'm interested in is your journey. You were going to college in the University of Alabama. Roll Tide, y'all. Roll Tide.
Oh, yeah.
But then you find yourself auditioning for Kinky Boots, and then you start this crazy journey. I want to hear about the beginnings of you going in for the show, and I know there's a bit of like an emotional craziness that went along with this experience, so I just want to get into it. What was it like at the beginning, and then how did it come about that you were actually standing on a Broadway stage?
Okay, so I was definitely in college for my senior year. I was in college for musical theater, but at that point, because that was a switch, because I wasn't going to college for musical theater. I come from a sports family. I was going to college for track. Growing up, I ran track, played football, boxed, baseball. And I was just singing in church. It was a clear shot for me.
You're not joking.
It was
You're not
a
joking.
Clear shot for me to be a pastor.
You are a athletic, sports playing pastor becoming human being that now happens to be a Broadway star. This is not what I expected. I didn't know this.
I'm Troy Bolton dipped in chocolate. I swear to God.
Bitch, really, Troy Bolton in the house. Chocolate Troy Bolton. All right. Well, I'm there. So you're going to your first sports pastor, but then all of a sudden you switch majors to musical theater.
Yes. One theater teacher in high school believes in me was like, "Look, you need to go to college for this. I know you're trying, like everybody's telling you run fast, but fuck that." But I was like, "Okay, all right, I'll do it." And I really found the passion in theater, and I worked really hard because I was late. And so I automatically just had this idea. I was like, I'm not going to get far until like, I just put in, I like got to, cause I'm late. And so Kinky Boots national tour came about. Kinky Boots Broadway just came about, and I was like studying the music because I was like, oh my God, this is how I sing. This is what I do. Like, this is what I do alone in my room when no one's watching. So I'm going to study the show. But we had a senior showcase, and it was my first time being in New York. We, you know, you sing for all the agents and the casting directors, and you'd be like, "Hey, I'm in college and I'm leaving and I'm showing the world what I'm bringing when I come." And so it's very that. And then the agent that I'm with put me in callbacks for Kinky Boots national tour without me even signing. And I was like, "Oh, okay, well, work." And then so I sent in a video. And then a couple of days pass by, I am in a math class, and they're like, "Hey, you have a callback. We would like you to be here tomorrow."
So at this point, you're in Alabama in a math class. You had sent in a video. They need you to come to New York the next day, and I assume you went.
Oh, absolutely. I got out of the math class. I called my mom and was like, "Look, I know you don't know much about this, but this is a giant deal. somebody needs to give me some money right now. I have to get on a plane ticket tonight.
I'm getting chilled, Nick. I'm getting full chills.
Insane. This story is actually insane. So I get on the plane. I get there. I do my material in front and I'm auditioning for the national tour. And I'm just like one person there. I'm like, boom, bam, great. And they're like, can you be here tomorrow? And I'm like, I have class tomorrow, but no, I can be here tomorrow. And then so like I stay a longer day and then I do the audition, go back. A week passes. They're like, can you come back? So just in spare of time, I would just say 7 callbacks in a month's time of me flying back and forth from Birmingham to Alabama to New York City. And like, and then every callback getting crazier and crazier each time. They were like, all right, this time Cyndi Lauper's there and you have to be in drag. And I'm just like, I have never put makeup on in my life. Like, what do you mean? I'm getting drag.
There's this visual I have of you just like going from wearing a football uniform, just for the sake of this visual. You're like this athlete that's only used to play sports, running, track. You were an Olympic star. And all of a sudden, you start to do this theater thing. The next thing you know, you're in callbacks for a Broadway production. They want you to be in full drag. It's like so 0 to 60, almost like you're being like your face is being shoved into a gay pool of glitter and dildos. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I say.
So I'm sure your brain was going crazy. Not only are you like confronting with all this crazy theater stuff, but you're also like career shift brought like this is the big
and coming out of the closet. Like this was how I came out of the closet. Like I probably would have stayed in the closet longer, but like I literally did a show that was like, hey, be gay.
Well, you know, they say theater changes lives, but I think this theater kind of forced you. Theater, ladies and gentlemen, the Broadway stage outed Nick Rashad Burrows. Let's just call it what it is. Broadway stage forced this man to tell the world.
I was not ready to tell my Alabama family. I wasn't.
I will say, it's like, I'm sure it's so difficult and for so many reasons. I mean, I'm from Missouri. It's different, but it's also similar with just kind of like the attitudes are very different from New York. But I feel like in a way, the blessing is that telling your family is such a difficult thing, but with the
excitement
on top of it, that you're like, but actually I'm like the best. I'm the NFL type of gay.
Yeah. I was like, it's pretty gaggy what I'm doing. And they're like,
you're right.
All right.
Like, I'm professional, full-on.
It's professional AF.
Wow. So then, seven callbacks. And then what happens to get to Broadway?
I'm in the airport on my way back home after my 7th callback, thinking like, oh, I'm going to get this tour. I noticed that in the airport, I saw that I heard that the casting went out for the tour. And I'm just so sad. Like 10 minutes later, I get a call. Hey, we know you only auditioned for the tour of Kinky Boots, but we would like you to be in the Broadway production understudying Billy Porter. Start rehearsals next week. Can you do that? Like, it was the craziest thing that has ever happened to me. I went back home to Alabama, graduated, and moved to New York City to understudy Billy Porter in Kinky Boots.
I mean,
and also do this new journey of being out.
Oh my gosh. I can't even wrap my mind around that feeling of being told you're making your Broadway debut, understudying one of the biggest stars, and then also coming to New York. I mean, it's kind of like you had to go to a second college in a way of like
very much so.
Broadway college, gay college, New York college. But when you moved to New York and of course started the process, what was the journey like dealing with being on Broadway? I mean, how old were you? You were like 21. So what was going through your mind? Are you the type of person that is so confident that you're just like, I've got this? Or were you having imposter syndrome talk? What was going through your head?
I am that person that is very confident, but who was just like, yeah, I can do this. I did have that energy. I really did.
Bless
but
you.
I also had met my match with New York City being the fact that I've only lived in New York. I was like constantly stressed trying to figure out a subway. Everything was uncomfortable. Like the food was disgusting to me. I was just like, I'm living my dreams, but I am in hell. And it was just because I was like, I had to learn this culture shock of a different world. And now I'm just like, New York is the best place in the world. I don't see myself anywhere else. But it was so hard and just like always trying to stand my ground with like I'm so young and everybody in this business was just like, who are you, kid? Who are you? Who do you think you are? And I'm just like being like, hi. And like just trying to like not piss anyone off. Like it was like so I like had all this inner, this confidence going into it. And then of course the city breaks you down, but honey, I learned and now can't nobody stop me.
Hello. I mean, yeah. that's a really inspiring example of if you're confident in yourself and you know what you have to offer, if people around you are treating you a certain way, that can't dim your light. It cannot tell you, you can't make yourself think that you can't do it. Cause obviously Nick Rashad Burrows knows that he can do it. And Nick Rashad Burrows did the thing, understudied Billy Porter, performed the role of Lola in Kinky Boots on Broadway at such a young age. I mean, I have to talk about Billy Porter just and what that experience was like. He is rightfully an icon and a star. What was it like understudying a person like Billy Porter and working with him?
He is amazing in every way, shape, form. He inspired me for so many years. I'll never forget when he took me out to dinner and he took me out to dinner to give me advice on how to be a leading man, a black leading man in this business. Best dinner of my life. It was so inspirational to me, and it meant the world that, and he just really, in the beginning of that process, he knew that I was just like no different from him, like this Southern boy coming into this big, and like he really took, he was my mama. He was Mama Porter. I call him Mama Porter. And he really took me under my wing in that process. And I am forever grateful.
That is so beautiful. I mean, Billy Porter was one of my favorite performers. But also what's inspiring about Billy Porter is that in a way he's been obviously working in a star, and P.S. sings one of the songs in the first Wives Club soundtrack. Neither here nor there.
Oh my God.
But Billy Porter didn't become the household name until late in his career. I mean, it's an example of he just chugged along sharing his gifts. And then finally the world kind of caught on, and now no one can stop Billy Porter.
Can possibly even think of it.
Truly. Well, thinking of you sitting with Billy Porter at a dinner and then Billy Porter mentoring you and talking, it's just like anyone would dream of having a fairy godmother is Billy Porter.
I love him.
Wow. So wait, you actually brought up though for a second that after Kinky Boots you did Something Rotten.
Yes.
So you did that, the Broadway National Tour, the role that you played is, I think, one of the most amazing ways to start a show. This, like, stunning...
With the mild blue feather.
Bloom feather Elizabethan fucking star walks
coolest
out.
Coolest costumes ever.
And then it's Welcome to the Renaissance. I think it is one of the campiest, funniest shows I've ever seen, and I just like am devastated I didn't see you do it. But what was it? Because you also did the tour with Adam Pascal, right?
Yes.
Talk about
Adam Pascal. We love him. He's the silliest, funniest man ever. We had so much fun on stage with him every day. We really did. Yes, I played the minstrel, who is the narrator of the show, and I get to sing "Welcome to the Renaissance" every night. It's the first song, and it was just like, when I saw the show, I remember being like, oh, I love this show. I'll never be in it, but I love this show. Because I was like, I can tap, but like they are tapping. They are tapping. And the minstrel has to tap dead front and center. So I was just always like, oh, this is fantastic, but not my journey. Great. But I was like,
but then it was.
Well, how'd
you get it?
Well, I'll tell you this little secret. I am a tapper now. I will not knock myself down anymore. If I survive this show for a year and a half, I'm a tapper. Before that, I didn't think of myself as a tapper. And I lucked out with having a best friend in Marisha Wallace, who did the show on Broadway, who is a superstar now. She's been Effie. Go buy her album tomorrow. She's a superstar.
Yes.
She was in the Broadway company and was like, and I was friends with them and they all knew me. And they were just like, oh, we'll just send him. Somebody watching gonna be mad. They sent me videos of the dance audition, and so I just learned the dance audition, and I acted like I didn't know it. You know, when you're like, and I went in there and I gave that dance audition hell. I was just like, oh, what's that? Could you do it one more time?
So was it on 7 or was it 8? Meanwhile, you know the entire thing.
I know the entire thing. Been taught. I'm like, everyone has taught me. I'm like, well, can you get back? I don't know if I can get that. All right, it's fine. Okay. Everyone hated me. I was
I'm picturing the full charade of you fully acting the little deer in headlights. Wait a minute, this is so much choreography. Cut to a 5, 6, 7, 8.
That's legitimately what happened. I'm trash. Like, I literally did that.
And I'm sure the people behind the table were just like, oh, I don't know if he's going to. Okay, he got it. He, I guess we're casting him.
And then we got to rehearsal and I was like, look, y'all got to take your time, baby. That was a facade. I am not going to pick this dance up any quicker than what I'm doing right now. I'm just letting you know.
Oh my, but then see, that would terrify me to like the night before rehearsal starts. You're like, wait a minute, these people think that I can pick things up and kill it so quickly, but I'm sure you did better than you thought you would.
I did good because like, I just like, I was watching the show a lot. When I feel like I will not allow myself to be the weak link. I just can't do it. So like, I was just YouTubing every little thing and like learning it before it. And it was also the craziest time of my life because I was doing double duty for like 3 weeks of kinky. So I was putting on heels, 6-inch heels, and stomping around in kinky boots every day. Well, no, every morning I was tap dancing from 9 to 6 and then leaving to go do my show. I did that for like 3 weeks. It was the most exhausting time of my life.
I mean, thank God you were young. I mean, you're still young now, but thank God you were still, what, 23 or something?
Yeah.
Like, because I feel like after a certain age, our bodies, I'm not sure it can handle. That's physically, whoever says that Broadway performers are not athletes, that is wrong. A complete lie. I have done nothing close to the physical stuff of you, Nick Burrows. However, I did the musical Elf, the musical, and my body running around as Buddy the Elf 8 times a week,
oh my
it
God.
Was devastating. My
it hurt.
I threw my back out. I like started getting weird. I mean, it's like a marathon. Like, and I'm not just saying I'm saying it's a marathon.
Actually, people don't realize that actually legitimately is a marathon to do the things that we do.
Absolutely. So any people that are trying to go into Broadway, you just like, you better
get ready.
Start working out. Run on a treadmill because, okay. I mean, there's so much more though. So,
oh yeah. I did that, and I also was the first Black man to play Shakespeare in Something Rotten.
Yes!
We called it a Chocolate Spear. We loved it. It was so much fun.
I remember there was a video I saw of you, a little bootleg moment, and was that, what was it like knowing, like, as the curtain was up, you're like, I'm a fucking star. I am Shakespeare. What was going through your head?
I mean, it was just so cool. Like, it was just like, when the opportunity presented itself, I was like, I love this role. I remember seeing it on Broadway and being like, seeing Christian Borle tear that apart. Like, it was amazing. I thought it was so funny. And I was watching, I was like, oh, that's the role I want to play. Nobody would ever let me play that though. Man, that is the role. I am so that. And then cut to like when I got the chance and just was like, oh, okay, let me just stop doubting myself and be like, well, there's no reason he can't be dipped in chocolate. Let me just bring it to their attention. And when I did it and actually earned it, I felt so good. It felt so good that I got out of my own way of being like, they're not going to see me for it because I'm Black. And I was like, that's ridiculous. They should see me for everything because of that reason. And so when I got it and every time I got to do it and the love like that I got from it and the like, Instagram account, like of like young Black kids, like sending, like it meant the world. Are you kidding me?
It's huge. I mean, when they say representation matters, to think that people are limiting themselves because they think that they don't deserve to be seen because, you know, if the way you look, you wouldn't be acceptable to play part. But like, of course Shakespeare should be played by an incredible Black performer like Nick Rashad Burrows. Why the hell not? And then the fact that you could change so many lives around the country is just,
It was really special and so much fun. I just love getting to play the diva walking around in leather tights, being an asshole. It was so fun.
So speaking of Broadway coming back, when the pandemic started, you were in the Tina Turner musical.
Yes, yes, yes.
So
really excited.
Tell me about what was going through, being told to you the last couple of weeks of you performed before they shut everything down.
Well, I'll tell you, I was laser beam focused because I was getting ready to get my mom a plane ticket because I was on for Ike Turner for an entire week. I was like, my mom's going to come see me play Ike Turner. I'm going to play the King of Rock and Roll and be a big villain. I can't wait. I was so excited. And literally the day before, the day before is when it got canceled. I was like, of course there were other things to worry about. The world is like we should, but I was like, really? I just wanted to do this for my mom.
I mean, it feels like so many people before the pandemic were having these really big things coming up. And then of course, when everything started, it just like completely changed the trajectory of what so many people were doing. I mean, not everyone was about to, you know, play a starring role on Broadway for a week, but like
people had things to do. People had plans.
And it goes to show you that when the world is being ravaged by a deadly virus, then the virus doesn't care. The virus doesn't care if you're going on for Ike Turner because the virus is going to completely stop everything. But they're saying, so when Broadway comes back, have you been getting any sort of communication from producers, or are they just saying like, when it's back, we're back?
Yeah. Tina feels very confident to come back when everything comes back.
I love to hear that.
We were doing very well. I have no doubt in my mind that Tina will be back. It's just when the rest of the world decides to get it together and we're, you know.
Yeah. One of my last questions about kind of Broadway themed, because there's so much to unpack here, but I've been told that you have met Liza. Is that real?
Oh my God. So that was the craziest day ever. Liza Minnelli sat in the front row of Something Rotten. And I came out and I do, and I'm the first person that sings, and I'm right directly in the center. And there she is. She's just smiling and giddy. And I sing, I give the song hell. Do you hear me? I give it all I can. I was like, we're not joking around. Liza freaking Minnelli is in the freaking audience. Let's go. And so I like, probably should have calmed down. But, so after the song, she goes, she, after I finished, because Renaissance means rebirth, she goes, oh! She pointed at me. And I was elated for the rest of the show. That was the very beginning of the show. And so cut to intermission. I hear that she's in the boys' bathroom smoking a cigarette. And when she left and went back to the, I went to the bathroom to go look at the cigarette. And it was still in the toilet. And I'm so stupid because I didn't pick it up and just frame it. I hate myself to this day for not picking up that cigarette and keeping it and framing it. But I just took a picture of it.
Why didn't I pick that up?
Nick, okay. We can frame the picture. We can frame the picture. If you have that picture, I need you to send it to me, because even any glimpse of something that belonged to Liza Minnelli. But I also have to say your description of it is so vivid, because I can literally hear Liza. I can hear her watching. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I can hear Liza doing this.
I was like, no, I couldn't believe
She's the most active listener, the most smiley. Have you seen the video of her, of someone asked her, I think it's Larry King, that's like, so what's your goal for this coming year? What's the hardest part about being you? And she goes, being alive.
Oh my God, yes.
But then she watched you on stage, gave you a point, gave you a thumbs up.
And then we met her after the show. She came backstage. And then she was saying hey to everyone. And then when I walked up, she like looked at me and she was like, oh, and then pointed at me and then said, you. There's a video on my Instagram of her like pointing at me and being like, oh my God, I loved you. And I literally melted. She said, and then Rob McClure was just like, he did the show for you. Like in the video. And then she was like, oh, I know. And I loved it. And then she said to her assistant, write down his name. I want to remember his name. She wrote my name in her phone. I don't know what she was going to do with it, because she didn't put my number in there, but she just wrote my name. And I was like,
Random. Liza Minnelli wakes up, looks at her notebook and says, Nick Rashad Burroughs. And then she puts the notebook away. Who cares what she's doing with it? She has the name.
And I was like, go ahead, Liza, get it. It was the best day of my life. I was so dramatic too. When I walked out of the room, I like did the like the slide down a wall. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like I literally slid.
I'm trying to think what song would accompany that cinematic moment of you sliding down the wall. Camera zooms in on your face.
It's up to you.
Tear goes down your cheek.
You understand.
And then it goes into a quiet falsetto of the last note.
And then it's a remix of I think the morning come, I think about you. Have you heard that? What is it?
Yes. I think about you. I mean,
but with that like 70s like dance jam beat, like I was like, this is the saddest song in the world from Follies that you just decided to make a pop hit.
Please, I want to see the pop version of Losing My Mind. Are you kidding? My God.
Losing My Mind by Liza Minnelli. Everyone go listen right now.
I mean, Liza probably is, with all respect, losing her mind. Wow. What a visual. What a moment. For literally one of the biggest gay icons of our living is Liza Minnelli. So big ups to Liza Minnelli. Let's go, though, into some pop culture. I want to hear from you just in terms of, like, we've talked about Patina Miller. We've talked about Sutton Foster, Liza Minnelli. Are there any TV shows or movies that are like things that you could watch a million times that no matter how many times you've seen it, like for me, Sister Act 2, I can watch it every week of my life and never get tired of it. Are there any things for you that are just like you grew up watching that you're obsessed with still?
For sure. I mean, Dreamgirls, Dreamgirls in Chicago, those who come on, I'm there. I'm not moving. I'm going to watch.
I think those two musical movies from musicals are some of the most well done. And let it be known that, talk about being closeted, I've had one girlfriend in my life, and it was my junior year of high school that I think started dating her, maybe even my senior year. I was a late bloomer in terms of experimenting with heterosexuality. One of my first dates is we saw Dreamgirls in theaters. And as Jennifer Hudson is singing and I'm telling you, I'm not going, I start crying, and I literally, it started to dawn on me. I was like, oh no, I don't think I like women. I mean, I was like, I knew, but I was like, I don't think many straight men are like giving standing ovation at the AMC in St. Louis, Missouri to Jennifer Hudson.
Stood at the AMC. We'll never forget.
Do you think that Jennifer Hudson is, in terms of acting quality compared to Beyonce, who do you think you would rather see continue an acting career? This is a controversial question, but I'm curious your take.
I know it's a controversial question. Beyonce, I don't care what anyone says. I know we say that she's not the best actress in the world. She did better in when she played Etta James. She was incredible. What movie was that? Cadillac Records. She was great. She was great. She was giving acting beats. I don't care what anyone says. She was giving acting beats.
But you know what?
She was giving acting beats in Dreamgirls because she was just playing herself. We love J-Hud. We love J-Hud. I am just the biggest Beyonce fan. I share the same birthday as her.
I
love her.
I mean, one of my biggest religious experiences was seeing Beyonce in concert. I have a video of my husband, Matt, screaming his bloody head off at a stadium in Queens.
Same. The intro videos when she's just like, peace, growth, all of that. Honey, I'll watch those for hours. Those are beats for me.
Yes,
I will watch them.
But also, speaking of controversial takes, some people say that Jennifer Hudson can't land the acting beats as much as we would like her to. I mean, look, I think Beyonce is great. I think Jennifer Hudson is great. But your take of voting Beyonce, I don't think our listeners will deeply disagree.
I don't think so either. Also, I would like to say, Miss J-Hud has Aretha Franklin coming out. Here's the tea. Jennifer Hudson was asked by Aretha Franklin to play her. So whether we think anything, I'm like, I can't say nothing. The queen has spoken. I don't think J-Hud may not have proof of being the best actress in the world, but I'll tell you one thing she was put on this earth to do, and that is sing Aretha Franklin's music.
Aretha Franklin's not asking me to be in any movie, so whatever. I think about Jennifer Hudson.
And Aretha Franklin ain't nice. So apparently, like I think that, sure. And we shouldn't diminish J-Hud and Beyonce just because they're not the best actors in the world, because they do other things that are beyond measure that people couldn't even possibly think about. Mm-hmm. So I know with all the money going into this, somebody is going to whip Miss J-Hud into shape. You think she is going to like go out here and just be a man? No, They know what people are concerned about.
100%. I mean, that movie is going to be incredible. And the fact that Aretha Franklin was on her deathbed and she was like, one more thing. Will Jennifer Hudson please play me in the movie? And then it's like, you know what?
It's just like, give that to her.
She has no choice but to be absolutely incredible because someone's dying wish was for her to play. I 100% agree with that.
Will make you dig down. That type of pressure will make you dig deep into yours. I couldn't tap and I had to tap in the front.
The things she's put in, she has no choice but to slay and rise above. Color Purple, incredible. Cats, she was great. But there's been a controversial take. I put on Instagram a while ago a controversial take about the Sex and the City movie. As we all know, the new series is coming out. Jennifer Hudson is cast as Sarah Jessica Parker's assistant. One of the hot takes I said was that I made a comment about her acting in the movie, but someone made a very good point that it was the way it was written was really sort of abysmal, and she did what she could. And I actually 100% agree with that. So I want to apologize to anyone that ever heard me say that she was not good in that movie. She did what she could. They gave her a part. She was Louise from St. Louis. She had to deal with Carrie Bradshaw's monstrous ass. So you know what? I take it back, Jennifer Hudson. You did what you could.
Also, wasn't Joshua Henry her boyfriend in that
movie? Yes.
Oh, my God.
Her gorgeous St. Louis boyfriend was Joshua Henry.
We love him. We love
him. And that movie did something right by putting Joshua Henry as the gorgeous.
It really did. It was amazing. I don't even remember the movie. I just remember being like, who is this black god king man who just kissed Jennifer Hudson? Like, that's what I remember.
He is next level. I mean, also not only gorgeous, one of the most talented. Like, it's unfair.
That's a great part. His music just came out. Everyone go listen to his music.
Yes, listen to Joshua Henry. Are you, in terms of Sex and the City or like guilty pleasures, maybe reality TV? What do you tend to watch or look forward to when you're watching TV? Are you like a Real Housewives person? Are you a Kardashian? Like, what's your guilty pleasure?
Well, I'll say first, I am in mourning. I am deeply hurt because Insecure just announced that is going to have its final season after 5. Like, 5 is it.
Okay. I didn't know that.
That's found out from Variety yesterday. Rough day for me. Oh, God, I love Insecure. I love that show. I love Issa Rae. I think she is so silly and funny and brilliant and genius and well-lotioned. I just love her. That is one of my top favorite shows. Lovecraft, I can't even handle scary things, but Lovecraft Country, I recommend it. It's so good. It is so amazingly acted. They're getting every Emmy. The way that Watchmen got every Emmy, they're going to do it next Emmys around. So a mix of shows like that, and I mean, we're watching RuPaul's Drag Race. We're excited that it's back on. Who is your top three right now?
I love Rosé. I love her.
She's a star.
A star. I mean, Tina Burner, though, I feel like she's really polarizing. I feel like people are either loving her or thinking that she's scary and not nice. And I'm an undecided voter about Tina Burner.
Here's one thing that they like, whether you like her aesthetic or not, what you will not be able to deny is that is a bona fide drag queen. That is a drag queen that has put into work. She knows exactly what she's doing. These young queens could literally never. They may have a better fashion idea than her, but you literally are on this show because you watch people like her every week tear it down and show you what a drag queen. She is like base level, like, hey, I know we're here to see the fashionable looks, but let's still remember this is a drag competition and she brings drag.
And no one can say that she has not got all the skills needed to be an incredible drag queen. That is a very good point. I think the question is like, is her energy something that you want to see win the thing? Tina Burner is just clearly a seasoned professional and went on that show knowing what she does. However, one of my early favorites is Gottmik, and the story, even very coming important. Out on the show, you know, gender identity and just being a unbelievable drag queen, I think is the show, makeup. The show needs Gottmik. But it feels, here's what's really interesting, is it feels like Simone is a very early favorite.
Yeah.
My nervousness, my take is that I'm obsessed, but she's starting so high that sometimes people try to knock them down and it might be hard to climb back up. I don't know what to expect.
She's doing the whole Gigi Good dipped in chocolate routine. Like, you remember how everyone was like, Gigi Good, she's it. And then somebody's going to come in later and be like, I don't know. I mean, so I'm not saying, but it's just like, Simone is literally her sister. They have the same, like, they're from the same house. You know that?
So I did not know that.
They're from the same house of Avalon. And that's what she wore when she wore that boxing thing. She had Avalon on it. And that's what, yeah, they're like sisters. They're like, if you look at their Instagram, they're like this. And it makes sense because they have very similar, like, fashion, like, vibes, aesthetic. Yes. And those queens are always the favorite in the beginning because we're just like, ooh, yes, these looks. And
right.
The competition going on. And then we realize people like Tina Burner is what we want to see because mm-hmm. these are the ones that know how to do the competition. But, like, so I get that. I get that wholeheartedly.
But it's also, I think you make a good point that when the first impressions are what the look is and the gorgeous drag, but then when you get to know the queens and then you get to see the personalities come through. I mean, probably Bob the Drag Queen is an example of that, of just like, clearly at the beginning, you love, they're a great drag queen, like, gorgeous. But by the end of it, you are so deeply obsessed with Bob's everything personality and everything that it makes everything become even better. And it's like, yeah, Bob the Drag Queen is one of the best of all time on that show.
I remember when he won, I was like, there is no one, it's him. There's no question.
And
they were like not coming for Bob because Bob is gorgeous, but like these people were killing him in some of these looks. Mm. But even still, I was just like, it doesn't matter. They do not have the star quality that he has. That
it is star quality. Yeah.
And so I think that comes through later in the season. I'll tell you my top three.
Please.
Who I'm obsessed with. I love everyone you mentioned. You said Gottmik, mm-hmm. Tina Burner, and Simone?
And Rosé.
Rosé. We love her. We love my tops. My tops may be controversial. I don't care. It's just how they make me feel.
Good.
I love Olivia Lux. I love her. I think she is an angel. I think she is a superstar. She looks beautiful to me. When people be booting her, like her pink and yellow, I'm like, no, that hair was cool. And that pink look was great for me when she's not going to hurt a fly. You just want to hold her and protect her. You know, she's great.
Wait. I
love her.
Love Olivia Lux.
And I love that those bitches doubted her. Ooh, I love when people doubt somebody and they show you. So her, Simone, hands down. Simone is going to be in the top three. Whether she gets there and starts to struggle, she's going to make it to that top three. That mm-hmm. girl is a star. And we agree on Gottmik. Gottmik is, that is a cool, that is that level of talent. And also inspiration to like integrate mm-hmm. the queer community and like accepting more drag because there's so much drag out there.
And I hope the show continues to go in that direction of bringing more diversity in terms of gender and defining of what drag is, because clearly drag is mainstream now. Obviously it comes from a gay, queer, you know, minority perspective, but RuPaul's Drag Race did this. I mean,
and it got Emmys every year. Like, that's everybody voting.
Hello.
That's not just a queer community voting. That's the world voting. And it got those Emmys over and over because it's great. It's quality. It's fantastic television. And these queens are working hard. Like, sure, someone could look at us and be like, oh, these gays talking about Drag Race. Da, 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 da. But I'm like, no, we are talking about people that are out here, like, really doing detailed work.
Yes.
That takes training.
I mean, it's our version of sports, I think. I mean, obviously you used to play them. I never did, but I think like it's our communities watching the Sunday Super Bowl Sunday. It's watching, you know, I don't know, sports references, but wow. Okay. So, let me ask you one question before we sign this off. The world is ending and you can only save one character actress. I mean, it can be a Broadway star. It can be a TV film star, but there's only one actress that you can save. Who do you think it should be?
Viola Davis, hands down. Absolutely. It's her. No one can just tap into battered Black lady anguish quite like she can. It is just a pain and a misery that is just so exciting that comes out of her eyes and mouth. I just, whoever hurt her, I applaud, because that person made gold out of her.
How dare you hurt Viola Davis, but however...
How dare you? Thank you.
Wow, it's a mixed bag of emotions with Viola Davis. But you know what? Nick Rashad Burrows, thank you so much for doing this. What a joy you are. I can't wait to see what happens next for you. And I'm following your career just so deeply and closely.
Thank you for having me. I love you so much. Mm-hmm. I tell you all the time that you are a comedic genius because you have me laughing daily. And I love you so much.
Nick, I don't deserve you. Well, hopefully we'll get to do another episode of this soon, talking about the Tony Award you just won. And I'm excited. I'm excited. There you have it. Nick Rashad Burrows. Gosh, he's a star. I do want to say that we did discuss RuPaul's Drag Race after like episode 3. So if you don't agree with our opinions, I can guarantee you that they have changed. You know how that goes. Every episode we feel differently about the queens. Make sure you subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. We want to make this algorithm horny. Oh, and you gotta send me a DM with a screenshot that you've subscribed, because you yourself could win Lady Gaga Chromatica Oreos. That is assuming I can find them. It's really stressing me out. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll see you next time.